Welcome to the, what are we now here, Mac, on Mac and Cheese? 30...
If you can believe it, 36.
Well, I'm shocked. I'm coughing. Unbelievable. 36 already. It's because this city's so full of interesting topics and things to talk about.
There's always something new going on.
There always is. And we thought we'd kick off this one again. We're going to do sort of three or four segments at 4 to 5 minutes each as opposed to one big topic.
Yep.
Construction season. They've kicked off and they said, we're going to spend, and they somehow come out with the exact numbers, $404 million, right? Well, that's terrific, but it gets really confusing. How much of this is like pay as you go? How much of it, like, are they including the Walterdale Bridge that they're going to spend X amount on?
Yeah.
And every one of the big projects has got federal or provincial money in.
Yeah.
And I'm always terribly confused by these things, and I write a business column. You know, it just seems like Greek to me. But in any case, and also the other thing I find highly amusing is that all the media just takes them at the word, right?
Oh, they just publish the numbers if it's gospel, right?
They don't have a clue.
No question.
They don't have a clue. You know, how much of that $404 million, I ask, is the Walterdale Bridge project? I mean, the big sign up top there says it's a $200 million bridge.
Yeah.
Okay, well, how much of that's provincial and how much of it is city? And if it's city, well, is that money being borrowed or is it pay as you go? And if it's $50 million this year, is that coming out of the $400 million or is it on top of the $400 million? Anyhow, and I'm sure if we had some economist from the city, he'd spin our heads around saying, on the one hand this, on the other that, you know.
It'd turn into an hour-long show, though, I feel.
Oh, God. And apparently this one is capital and operating all mixed together.
Yeah, and the news release did talk about the Walterdale Bridge and some of the other large projects. So I have to guess that it's at least a part of those projects included in that number. But it would seem that there's maybe three kinds of funding. There's the capital budget, which we do now every 4 years, which is generally used for big road construction projects, building projects, things like that. There's the operating budget, which is an annual thing currently, which we use to pay people, staff and services and things like that. And then there's also the dedicated neighborhood renewal percentage that is a part of your taxes every year now that's devoted to refurbishing sidewalks and roads and neighborhoods.
That's right. So we did actually add a point or two on taxes, did we not?
That's like
this
one and
is exclusively going into this envelope to do neighborhood renewal.
Yep. It's like we have an aging deficit. Infrastructure, let's take a dedicated bit of funding and put it toward that every year.
And this was a good thing, but when I look this year, we're only doing 4 neighborhoods.
Yeah, they've definitely brought it down this year compared to the last cycle. I'm not 100% sure why, but it's less than they did.
Funding? But are we keeping up? I mean, remember when this thing really hit the fan a few years ago? It was because there were some 80 neighborhoods that were in dire need of being rebuilt, and no one seemed to know how to go about it. Is this fix, I know it was a good thorough discussion and there was some money allocated, but are we actually going to catch up? I mean, my question to you is quite simple. Rumor has it, and I'm almost willing anecdotally to believe it, that Calgary's roads are better than ours, much better than ours. And yes, you can argue it's about our clay base or whatever, but have we failed to put enough money into roads overall? And point B, I've always been a little surprised that one of Iveson's platforms does not include, look, guys, we got a whole pile of wish lists, but until we get our roads up to a point where people are not screaming about potholes every spring, that's got to be our number one priority. But
well, he did talk quite a bit about that during the campaign, but I guess now it's like, how do we figure out how we're going to fund it, right? I mean, driving through Calgary, I guess I would anecdotally say, yeah, there seems to be fewer potholes. I don't see anybody. I don't know if you saw early this week already, there was photos of potholes and they were planting flowers in the potholes in Edmonton on breakfast television. And I don't see that in Calgary. Maybe they're just not as creative as us, though. You never know. But yeah, I think you're right to say that we haven't invested enough in the roads over the years. But it does seem like there's some roads that are just, no matter what you do, they fall apart incredibly quickly. And I'm thinking of Argyle under 99th Street by Calgary
Trail.
Oh
yeah, but that's been a mess for like 20 years, mate.
But surely we've got to have a way to fix that now. I mean, we little computers in our pockets and we can't keep that road from crumbling?
It is a real interesting question. I mean, even I've now lived in the same neighborhood for 20 years and I remember 123rd Street, they did a big paving job on it and here we are 10, 15 years later and it's getting bumpy and cracked. The cycle seems to be awfully short. And I remember one time, too, down on Fox Drive, they had this huge bloody great machine that everyone said, oh, this is the best thing to slice bread. It chews it up in the middle. It bakes it all. No, it chews it all up at the front. It bakes it all in the middle and honks and steams like, you know, somebody's machine. And then the other end, it comes out nice, fresh, new pavement. Like, wow, isn't this amazing? There was one problem. The stuff didn't last.
Yeah,
Apparently, they discovered it was only going about 5 years before it was completely turning to mush again.
Yeah.
So we do. I'm always curious about that as well. But you would think, surely you would think that asphalt, the zillion-dollar market for asphalt, especially in northern cities, would warrant someone should come up with some great asphalt that would last 15, 20 years.
Or maybe there's just money in selling more of it to you every year. I don't know.
I'm enough of a believer in the market forces and technology that if someone could make
a big enough advance,
if someone could make $100 million out of an advance in asphalt, and every city around the world would grab it and go with it because you're extending your life and you don't get all these complaints.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, now the city has started to do some additional research on pavement technologies, I guess. So we'll see if that pans out. But the thing about the construction that's always interesting to me as well, you're right about the numbers. It's always very confusing, but they always do a kickoff too. Like they have a big media thing that says we're now into construction season, and I'm looking around and all I see is construction. It's like, when did we leave construction season?
yeah, I know. It's sort of a tradition more than anything else.
You know?
It's like it's Easter. It must be a construction season starting.
We got a bit of meat available.
Well, you know what they say about Canadian winters, right? Or Canadian climate. We have two seasons, road construction and winter.
That's true. Right?
So, are we doing a good enough job? I guess so. I'd sure
Could
like
we
to
do
see more progress.
Probably.
And that was one of the Carrie Diot's platforms that I did find quite appealing. That, look, guys, let's quit dreaming about all this other stuff and just get the roads fixed.
Yep.
But.
All right, next topic. We're going to talk about, still with roads and stuff a little bit, infrastructure, the bridge over 97th Street.
Let's not call it a bridge.
Royal Alberta Museum.
Yeah, we keep calling it a bridge, but in fact, when you drive up 97th Street, it's an underpass.
Yeah.
The road goes under what used to be the CN rails that went in and have now all been taken up by everything else, right?
Right.
And at the moment, there's not. You're saying there's some cute little things happening there, but
I think of it as a bridge because it's now called the Living Bridge, and they've this group has planted a whole bunch of plants and stuff up there as a community project, which is a nice way to reuse something that was just dead and ugly.
If 10 people a day are using a bridge, is it a bridge?
Well, and like you say, it was intended originally for a railroad, right?
Yeah.
Nothing else. So
yeah. So, but they're talking about basically we want to take that thing, lift it out, take the China Gate down there on, what is that one, 102
Avenue?
102
Avenue, yeah.
And kind of lift it up and carry it across and plump it down where this underpass is now.
Yeah.
Well, on the surface, it sounds like a rather good idea, and it's always been a bit of an anomaly why the real Chinatown, to my mind, is 97th Street north of what is that, 104th Ave.
Well,
right?
This is the new Chinatown, and then the old Chinatown is where the bridge the gate currently is, right? Down on 102.
But so most of Chinatown has left the, quote, old Chinatown and has moved to the, quote, new Chinatown. The new Chinatown's been there ever since I've been here, which is, mid-70s.
Yeah.
So I don't quite get why it was put there in the first place, but be that as may, I think it was partly to do with the Harbin partnership, and maybe it was an easy place to put it.
Well, the new Chinatown's not that new, though, right? And even still, they do events in old Chinatown, there's a large number of people and community organizations, Chinese community organizations and stuff
here and
on
there.
Right?
But by and large, I mean, you got the old folks home and a few of the, maybe 10 or 20
there's
others.
There's a few businesses and stuff over there as well, but the Chinatown you'd think of, if you were going to another place, you're right, is what is our new Chinatown. So
it's
97th
shops.
Street. Yeah. Shops, restaurants, things like that.
So why is there controversy around this idea of moving the China Gate?
Well, I think there's always been this interesting push and pull between the two Chinatowns. Like, it's weird that we have two and that they're not really connected.
You think there's some internal things going on in the Chinese community? Like,
maybe.
Sorry.
Don't want to go down that road.
You're from new Chinatown. I'm from old Chinatown. Oh, okay.
I think there maybe is a little bit of that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the other thing, I guess, is the Royal Alberta Museum and the construction going on there. Who knows what that'll mean for Chinatown? Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Like, how will that development affect, the way that Chinatown develops in the future, right? So,
okay. You had mentioned, I thought it was real interesting, about Rexall Place versus what we're now calling the Rogers Arena, right?
Yeah, Rogers Place.
How does Rexall survive? The journal has sort of started to look at this seriously in serious numbers. I don't see an answer. I especially think one of the things that's come up lately is that the Canadian Finals Rodeo, which is one of the main reasons that you keep Rexall Place open, their contract's up in 2016, and every time that contract's come up, they don't hesitate to have a good look around, entertain other offers, and we've been pretty frightened about losing it. Can Northland still give them a building that, can we keep that building up enough? Right. Sometimes I think that Northland's may just wash its hands of Rexall Place and the track. I think they might just go to the city and say, all we can do, folks, is run our convention center.
Yeah.
That we really are quite incapable. There's not enough revenue. We'll try to do the exposition, but we can't handle Rexall Place, and we can't handle the horse trade. And it's your problem, guys, because you own the land.
Yeah, you and I talked about Northlands in a previous episode, and I still don't think that's been resolved. I don't think there's any more clarity around what their role is going to be. But
I don't think anyone's come up with a business plan that's a real. And I don't think we're too small a city to have two arenas. It just seems to be fairly glaringly apparent. Unless they can keep Rexall Place as a kind of, you know, just a slightly seedy place that they're not going to put a lot of money into, but if someone wants to pay $10,000 less than they would to rent the Rogers Arena, then they'll go and use it. But
well, in the
is
journal,
there enough business?
In the journal, they interviewed Northlands and the Cates guys and somebody from Live Nation, so one of the big concert producers, right? And the Northlands folks are, of course, saying, oh, no, we're going to continue operating it. We're going to... Yeah. You know, we're going to be the second option for people, and the Cates group is, the Oilers group or whatever, they're saying, you know, of course we're going to go full on, we're going to offer the best package. People want a complete thing these days, not just the event, the venue, but the stuff around it.
And we're going to be competitive.
And then the Live Nation guy is saying, and I think he makes the best point of all, it's not like Edmonton is lacking for shows. There's hardly any shows that Edmonton didn't get because we didn't have a venue, right?
We're on the A circuit.
So what more would we attract by having a second venue? I mean, like you said, we're not a big enough market probably for, you know, simultaneous major events. We're already getting things like, you know, Katy Perry or whatever the real big concerts are, right? So it's an interesting problem.
I don't think Northlands really knows. You know, they're talking a good line, but I don't think anyone really has a clue. And I don't think we've seen any real hard look at numbers of what's going to happen when. So mark my words, 5 years from now or so, we're going to see them come to the city and saying, we just can't do it anymore.
And then another problem we'll have to deal with on this show, Graham.
For our episode 561.
I look forward to it.
You wanted to touch on, as our final thing, one of your favorite topics, which is the... every spring, just like they announce construction season, the food trucks come back from Capilano.
Capilano? Why are they in Capilano?
Because the Swallows are Capistrano. Sorry.
Capistrano. Oops. Okay. Gotcha.
The Swallows, just like the Swallows from Capistrano.
Got it. Food trucks are out in force already. It's not even quite May, and there's already been more than 7 or 8 out for lunch every day over the last week.
Are they busy? Are there lineups?
Well... it hasn't been that warm outside, so I don't know if the lineups are amazing. But it's good that they're getting a head start this season and getting back out there.
Are you pleased with the quality?
Yeah, there's some good options. So we've been compiling our list for What the Truck. We're starting to plan our season. And there's about 45 trucks on our list now.
Holy cow.
So it's gone up quite a bit.
Can these folks actually make a living at this, like doing lunches and special events for 5 months of the year?
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them do catering in the winter, of course, as well, right? So they have a year-round business.
Out of the little truck or?
No, usually out of a commissary, like some sort of a kitchen space that they
rent. It makes sense to me that if you've already got a kitchen or a commissary or a little restaurant, that you do this as a sideline.
Yeah.
But some of these guys make a pretty darn good living.
Yeah.
Or they've gone the other way, right? Who is it, the guys from Drift that opened up Woodwork?
No, Nomad was a food truck.
Nomad.
And they are no longer doing the truck, but you're right, they've now gone in and
so
opened
So they don't
Woodwork.
Want to keep the Nomad going as a sideline.
Yep. No, they sold their truck to somebody else and they went straight into the restaurant. And then you've got restaurants like The Act, which has started their food truck, and they're actually not running it this year because they're opening another restaurant called Meat. which is right next door. So they're leasing their truck to somebody else who's going to run the food truck for the summer.
This is all getting as confusing as the city's budgets. But it's all good.
But
it
it's
all
exciting that there's so many vendors, right? So some of them, I think some of them make a living at it. Some of them probably don't. But there's lots of room to grow still.
What's happened to that argument of, I don't buy it about the Tim Hortons or your typical eatery, but if someone's put together a little bit of a specialty restaurant, and then, like, how would the guys from Woodwork feel if suddenly a food truck showed up half a block away that was eating into their market? Do we just accept that they have a right just as much as any other food establishment does to set up wherever they want?
Well, how would they feel if a new restaurant moved in next door?
I know you can't stop
that. You can't really stop that.
But then you can argue they're on a level playing field. And I've heard that the argument is they feel that the trucks don't pay the same kind of taxes or
whatnot. They don't play as well as a corporate citizen, which I don't think is true at all. So if they did feel really, you know, put off by it and they wanted to complain, they would take their complaint to the city. My understanding is there's only been four in the last 2 years, and they've all been decided in the favor of the food trucks. So
there you go.
I mean, it's not cheap to set up a food truck. If you're going to do it well, and if you're going to be legitimate competition for a place like Woodwork, you're looking at $100,000 all in before you've got that truck up and running. So,
yeah, but a restaurant, $300, $400, $500 plus.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I know restaurants more, but it's not like you could just go buy a truck, roll up, and for a couple thousand bucks, you're a competitor, right? It doesn't it doesn't exactly work that way.
Well, and the other interesting one is our wonderful big food event in the summertime, what's it called again?
Taste of Edmonton.
Taste of Edmonton goes 10 days, right? Every other restaurant in downtown suffers, right? And a lot of them have done just, I can't win, my restaurant's empty, I might as well open up a place in the food thing, right?
Yeah, it's so marketing for them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and for some restaurants that are opening food trucks, they're not looking to do it as a way to make a ton of money. They're looking at it as a way of marketing, right? As a way of marketing their restaurants. So I think you'll see more of that actually this year as well. Do you like the food trucks? Are you looking forward to them?
Oh, they're fun. They're fun. I still prefer a nice patio I can sit in and, you know, have stuff bought to me. But
well, see, this is one of the arguments that you make. A food truck doesn't have that possibility for a competition. So
let a thousand roses bloom.
I think it's all good. It's all good.
There you go. Swallows and roses and confusing capital budgets.
It's spring, after all. It's spring.
I did bring a little bit of cheese this today. Today we are having, gentlemen, Adam, our producer, is going to reach over and help himself to some brie. Good standard, probably made somewhere by the trillions of tons that goes to President's Choice. It's entirely different from the artisan stuff of Eat Edmonton, about which we'll talk next week.
Eat Alberta, yep.
But, Eat Alberta, but this is still pretty good stuff.
Beautiful soft cheese. Oh, and it's really melting today. It must be getting warm outside.
Sitting in the sun here at our palatial glass studios. So until next week, episode number
36.
36, signing off.